He is the head coach of the Minnesota Wild, 8-1-1 in their last 10, four wins in a row, 17 wins their last 19 games. Holy smokes, Bruce Boudreau. Your team is on fire. Good afternoon, Gabby. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. Yeah, it's been sort of scratch your head time. You know, every game that we seem to be having some success, it's like, how'd we do that? That was pretty good.
Well, it helps having a goaltender who may just win the goalie of the year, and a mobile defense and some timely goal scoring and a rejuvenated Eric Staal. We were just talking before he came on about faceoffs, and we saw Austin Matthews deliberately lose one to gain better ice position on Saturday. Getzlaff has done this. Well, you know, you were his coach for years in Anaheim, deliberately lose a draw. Forecheck is on, force a turnover. Have you ever told a centerman to deliberately lose a faceoff to gain better position?
No, but I've shown face-off plays that if you lose it, what you can do. But the whole thing is that all five guys on the ice have to know what you're doing if you're going to lose the face-off, and that way you get a jump on it to go after it in the corners or wherever it may be. But if the center's just doing it by himself, then usually it's not going to work out. So everybody has to know, especially your wingers.
When you were in Anaheim and you would see Ryan Getzlaff do this, I remember he used to chew up, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins line all the time in Edmonton, and he would come back to the bench. Would you ever say anything? What'd you think when you would see that? Because Getzlaff wouldn't even try to win the thing, wouldn't even wave at the puck.
Well, I mean, I never said anything to him. I mean, during the course of a game, we might have talked about it after a game, but again, the wingers knew if he was losing the faceoff, they were jumping and getting in on the defense, and they'd seen something earlier that maybe the defense weren't quick on the draw or something, and the puck was deep, and we were winning the battles. Like with Getzy's line, usually it was big and strong, and if the puck was in the corner, if they lost the faceoff, then they would just out-muscle guys and get the puck back. But I mean, I always tell my centerman, you're the boss out there. You do what you want to do. Just make sure you have a plan.
I thought it was interesting. If you want to call it the perils of winning, Bruce, it was listening to you post game last night. I mean, you come back in Chicago, the Blackhawks are up 2-0. You win the game. As Jeff said, you're 17-1-1 in your past 19 games. So someone asked you a question like, are you surprised your team was able to cut? And you kind of said, well, that's what they're supposed to do. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, when you're losing, you can come up more things. But really, yeah, it's kind of a ride. And what the hell do you expect? That's what they're supposed to do, and they're doing it. It's that simple.
Well, I mean, it sounds that simple. It was scary. I mean, they kept talking about how mad they were after the Washington game, and that they'd had a whole battle practice the day before. And I'm going, geez, we're playing 3-4, and it's a long trip from Dallas. We're going to get killed. But our guys have got some really good resiliency, and the one thing about when you go 17-1-1, you never think you're out of it. And especially with our team this year, I don't know how the last 41 games are going to go, but we've only lost two games by more than one goal. So we have been in all the games. And so when you believe that you can always come back, there's a good chance you can do it.
Yeah, that was going to be my question about the belief system in this team, because, you come back and you've got guys that are spreading scoring around. You're getting scoring from almost everyone on any given night, can get one for you guys for a boost. But then you look at your goaltender and the way he's playing. And I just think coming into this year, kind of what was your expectation with this group when you don't have like an Ovechkin or a Perry Getzlaff and you've got this mash of players?
It was new to me that we didn't have the one dominant offensive player. I'd been lucky to have Perry and Getzlaff and Ovechkin and Backstrom in the 9 years that I'd coached, and they had a great supporting cast. Here was going to be all about team, and if you know, we could buy in that we're winning as a team. And I think one of the things we said early on, that nobody on this team is going to win the scoring championship, so who cares who scores? It's all about winning. And everybody just banded together, and you know, we've had a lot of different line combinations, but we start to find some pretty good chemistry on most of them. And like you said, every night somebody different is doing it. Last night, Stewart scores a goal, and he scored a goal the night before. And then some nights, Staal's line is really good, and Koivu's line, and Niederreiter got a goal last night, and the third line guy. So I mean, we're getting it from everywhere. But, you know, if we have any stars, it's on defense. I think Spurgeon and Suter don't get anywhere near the credit that they deserve. They play 25 minutes a night against every big line, and they're like 1-2 or something in the league in plus minus. So they've been fabulous for us.
Bruce Boudreau joins us, head coach of the Minnesota Wild, 17 of the last 19 in a positive fashion for the Minnesota Wild. One other player that I'm curious about, because whenever I watch him internationally, generally he's one of the best players on the ice, and you're waiting to see that translate in the NHL. How do you get the most out of Michael Granlund?
You know what? He is so skilled. He sees he could make every play. I mean, when you watch the World Cup, he was Finland's best player, I thought, this year. And if he has a problem, is he thinks he can make every play, and he sometimes gets in trouble being too cute. But he can skate. He's not afraid to get involved in the play. He can make the tremendous play. And he's very responsible defensively. That's a hard combination to find, but he's probably going to start getting a little more recognition now.
Bruce, years ago, a guy who coached you, Doug Carpenter, was typical of coaches, said, "I got my players out every day. Every day I want the players on the ice regardless." And you just referred to the schedule, the travel. John Tortorella's a guy who's brought up the whole thing about maybe not having day of game skates as much. And I'm curious, even in the last year or three, four, five, have you evolved that way at all, changed your thought process about that?
I think rest is a weapon. I mean, we haven't practiced much in the last 2 weeks at all, and especially when some of your players are in your 30s and we've got a really tough schedule coming up to us. I've given maintenance days, especially to Suter, Parisi, Pominville, Stahl, and Koivu on a regular basis, just because we need to keep them fresh, and they play a lot of hockey for us. So every now and again, we do need to practice. I mean, you can forget about some of your responsibilities, and you need to get back there and sharpen your skills a lot.
Yeah, I love that. I think I could have played for you, Bruce.
Yeah, all morning skates are optional.
There it is, exactly. I just look at your team, and I watched you guys earlier in the year, and I was like, man, Minnesota's a tough team to play against. Like, I think at the end of a game, when you leave playing against the Wild, you knew you played them, play a hard game, and you're going through this run you guys are on. As a coach, what's it like for you? Do you trust this group, the belief system, or is it every day, you know, you're kind of, okay, guys, you don't have to poke them and prod them or work them over, or is it just like a finely tuned machine right now?
No, I think you poke and prod all the time, but they do believe, but I mean, you can't let things slide in my mind anyway. The minute you start thinking things are really good, then all of a sudden something goes bad. I always try to think of myself as Lou Holtz, and I don't know if you know this football analogy, but every team Notre Dame used to play when Lou Holtz was there was the greatest team in the world. And you have to find reasons why they were great to get your team up for that game, no matter whether Notre Dame was playing a high school team. It didn't matter. That high school team was the greatest in the land. And that's sort of the thing we do here is we find all the good points of every team we're playing, and that if we're not ready, that this team is going to beat you, and we try to use that against them.
You're a guy, you love the hockey environments, and I know in Washington you were a part where it became a hockey environment. There used to be a Landover, Maryland, and then downtown, and it just kicks butt there. Anaheim, I know Brian Burke said the same thing. It's just kind of nondescript a little bit out there. There's a lot of things going on and not a traditional hockey market. What's it like being an NHL head coach in Minnesota, in St. Paul?
It's funny. It's a little different, but you're indoors all the time in your house wrapped in a blanket because it's 40 below, so you don't see anybody. In Anaheim, at least you're out on the streets. In Washington, it's a little different as well, but it's pretty chilly here. But it is a hockey mad place. If you're going out to eat, There's always people that come up to you and talk to you. And the one thing that I've found out is they have a lot of people that travel and come to road games. We see a lot of Minnesota Wild jerseys in the audience and walking around the hotels. So, I mean, they're quite fervent about their hockey.
Bruce, I want to end by talking about Jared Spurgeon a little bit. Colby and I do a lot of games at night, and whenever Minnesota's on, I'm always gushing about number 46. And I think Colby's probably sick of hearing me talk about Jared Spurgeon. So let's hear it from more of an authority and more of a legit voice on Jared Spurgeon. Why should Colby Armstrong pay attention to Jared Spurgeon, Bruce?
Because he's a genius. We were just talking about him. Scott Stevens called him Einstein on the ice. Whoever he plays with, he makes them better. I mean, for a guy, when I first came into camp and saw a 5'7", 160-pound player, and people would tell me that this guy was really good, I was having a hard time saying, man, he's so small, he's going to get killed. But he's fast. He's extremely smart. He's always in position. And he's not afraid. I mean, and him and Ryan Suter make a great combination. That's why they can both play 25 minutes and above each night.
You believe me now, Colby?
I do. And okay. You know what? Bruce is locked up in his house. The winters are cold, but I have a feeling come the spring and the playoffs, I think his buddy John Anderson will have him out on the boats there. They got so many lakes in Minnesota. I know he likes boating, so you'll be looking forward to that.
Hey, Colby, I got to tell you before we go, and he's in the next room watching this on TV, between him and Darby and Scott, who are all outdoorsmen, boaters, hunters, fishermen, and I couldn't care less about that stuff. There's no chance. They tried to talk me into buying a pontoon boat the other day at a boat show, and there wasn't a chance in hell that was happening.
That's the best.
Coaching
Bruce,
money.
Always appreciate your time. Continued success. It's gone great the first half of the season. Keep it rolling, Bruce.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon.